Every church must be equipped to respond well in the initial stages of learning about instances of sexual, physical, and emotional abuse. That's why the Southern Baptist Convention, Lifeway, and ERLC partnered together to create Becoming a Church That Cares Well for the Abused. This training curriculum of a handbook and 13 videos brings together top experts from various fields to help volunteers and leaders understand and implement the best practices for handling the variety of abuse scenarios at church, school, or ministry. You can access this free training at churchcares.com. Once again, that is churchcares.com.
Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
Welcome back to another episode of the Group Answers Podcast Show. I'm Brian Daniel, and as always, with Chris Surratt.
Hey,
Chris, welcome. It feels like it's been a while.
Yeah, we haven't recorded one of these in a few weeks. We kind of got ahead, so we have a few in the can, as they say in the business. But yeah, it's good to be back in the studio.
In the studio. Studio, you know, we started in the garage, like what we've said, and we went to the closet, and now we've got an actual studio. So things are good. Things are looking up.
Yeah, Lifeway has been very kind to us to provide these very nice studios.
And that's the good segue. In studio means that we can have live guests because we do have room for a third chair. So we are joined today by current new president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources of the Southern Baptist Convention, Ben Mandrell. Give it up for Ben Mandrell today.
I feel like you should cue the applause.
If we had one of those buttons, we definitely would.
Great to be with you guys. Hey, this is my first podcast ever with Lifeway. This is a big moment. This is huge.
So we're the
historic.
The first ones.
This is one of the most important moments in my life right here.
Well, with good reason, Ben.
You might want to reevaluate your life goals.
That's right.
Should we introduce them?
I think a more formal introduction would be, I think that would be well taken.
Because we're all about the formal here. But we've got Ben Mandrell. He's the newly elected 10th president of Lifeway. Ben had served as the lead pastor of Storyline Fellowship in Arvada, Colorado, where I was born, actually. Since its founding in 2014, a native of Tampico, Illinois, graduated from Anderson University in 1998, also holds a Master of Divinity degree from the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and a Doctor of Ministry degree from Union University. And your wife is named Lindley, and you've been married 18 years. Is that?
That's right.
Is that accurate? All right, cool. And you have four kids, Ava, Max, Miles, and Jack.
That's right.
So thanks for hanging out with us.
Big transition over these last, 8 weeks? About 8 weeks now?
Yeah.
With everybody getting settled into school, so you're coming up on fall break. That's huge. So high school, and then what are Miles, Max, Miles, and Jack? Where are they?
They're all three middle school students. So I got one high school girl, three middle school boys.
Was that 6, 7, 8 then?
Yep.
Good job,
it's a busy
Brian.
Life right now.
Should we just pray right now?
See, Brian is really good at memorizing kids' names. I'm impressed by that.
Not like he has it written in front of him right now.
Well, we met Ayla when we rode down the elevator. I think maybe your first chapel. Ava was on the elevator with us, and she seemed real excited about starting school. She's going to Ravenwood, right?
She is.
Ravenwood's a great big old school. They win a lot of stuff.
Do they?
I hear them on the news. Yeah.
That's awesome.
All right, so got to ask this. The process. So you were, Ben, I've known you 6 or 7 years now, I guess.
Yeah.
Not on Ben's bio, the author of two Bible studies for life, Bible studies that we did. And so when I met Ben, he was a senior pastor at Jackson, Tennessee.
Inglewood Baptist Church.
And you were student pastor prior to that. And you were like a 31 or 32-year-old senior pastor at a church that was decent size, right?
Yeah.
So there you are. And I get a text from Ben that says, by the way, I'm leaving. Lindley and I had always wanted to plant a church, and that's what we're going to do. And all of you guys moved to Colorado, and you planted Storyline. And that's 4 or 5 years ago, right?
That's right.
And Storyline, Colorado, we all know, not the easiest place to plant a church. And that church was around 2,000, give or take, right?
About 1,600.
1,600 when you guys left. So talk us through the process and how that came to be that you accept this call to become the 10th president of Lifeway Christian Resources.
Well, Brian, it's a good question. I never have set out knowing what God has in store for my life. I think I heard David Platt say this once, that our lives are a blank check. And God can rewrite that check at any moment. And the one thing you said that isn't true, that I don't know that I said that, was that Lindley and I have always wanted to plant a church.
Oh.
The truth is, we never thought about planting a church until like 6 weeks before we decided to go plant a church. The way God has worked in my life is that he just kind of swoops in, and all of a sudden, radical redirection in my life. And some have questioned that over the years. Like, are you really praying through these things? Are you making smart decisions? Are you surrounding yourself with wise counsel? But I have found in my life that it's when I just step off the cliff and trust God that I have grown the most and I've seen him do the most of my life. So stepping out to plant a church is a lot like stepping into the Lifeway. You don't really know what you're getting yourself into until you're in it, and there are challenges. And those challenges are where God gives the most glory in your life. And so starting a church in Denver, Colorado, after being a senior pastor of a large Southern Baptist church in West Tennessee was a monumental task. But it begins with having the right people and the right vision and the right DNA. And so we just try to make that thing as healthy as it could possibly be. I've always said that there's two kinds of pastors. There's those who talk a lot about growth, and there's all those who talk a lot about health. I'm not casting judgment on anybody, but I've always been a guy that says, hey, let's talk about health because healthy things grow. So we try to make it really healthy from the start with authenticity, transparency, and careful language around everything that we said. And it worked. To the glory of God, it worked. I mean, it started with a small group in my house opposed by our HOA, and soon went to a real estate building, went from a real estate building to elementary school to a high school. And then when we left, it was in a restored Walmart.
It's interesting because, as Brian pointed out, you've pastored a church in the South.
Right.
Jackson, Tennessee, which is definitely the Bible Belt. And then you pastored and planted a church in the West, which I would say is probably dominated unchurched, if that's a
For sure.
term that works out there. So how is your ministry approach different in each location? How did you go about reaching that community differently?
It all comes down to this one statement that is not mine, but was told to me early on. Invite people into your life and not to a location. That one statement informed everything we did at Storyline. Invite people into your life. Spend time with your neighbors. Get to know the people. Ask questions. Care about them as individuals. Decide you're going to love them, even if they will never come to your church. Have events that bless people who aren't going to expect a bait and switch at the end of, hey, but since we got you here, let's see if we can get you to our next church event. We just tried to do everything authentically as if we really and genuinely cared about them, whether or not they ever came to our church. And as a result, they started coming to our church. And so we just discovered in Denver that evangelism is actually a lot easier than we often make it out to be. It's friendship. It's caring about people at the deepest level. And it takes more patience, and it takes a longer time, but I think it brings a great harvest. And that's not to say that I'm against, you know, what I would call confrontational evangelism. I think there's a place for that. But in Denver, Colorado, we found that relational evangelism works.
So you're saying in Colorado, you can't just put up a church sign, have the coolest music in town, and draw a crowd.
They don't care. There's too many other beautiful things to go and see and play. I mean, there's no pressure to go to church in Colorado. There's more pressure to not go to church. People move to Colorado to have the weekend. They live for the weekend. Mm. You know, in the South, people brag about how many hours they worked last week. You know, I put in 80 hours. In Denver, they brag about how much they didn't work last week. I was on my mountain bike 80 miles. It's just a whole different culture and values. And so we just tried to listen to the culture and respond to it.
So you and I have talked about being out West. Chris, I don't know if we've talked about it, but my family and I lived in New Mexico for a little while. And had a similar journey and the transition coming back to the South. And it does, there's clearly a different mentality, just as Ben has articulated. So I'm sure that has informed some of the conclusions that you've come to about discipleship and small group ministry. So how does that experience or these experiences, how have they informed your conclusions on or emerging conclusions on discipleship and small group?
Well, I think, as you guys know, in small group ministry, every church is so different. Context is different. Expectations are different. So there's a lot of different ways to do it. And so I think there's a danger of saying, here's the way to do small groups. I think you have to listen to the culture and pay attention to what people really want and need. What we found in Denver was, number one, it's too expensive to build education space. We just couldn't financially support that model. Second of all, people loved the authenticity of being in each other's homes rather than in a typical Sunday school classroom. It cut down some of the barriers of church expectation. That came with a whole list of problems with childcare, which we can talk about that. There was also a sense of we wanted everybody to be on the same page. And so we tried to be really careful about just setting people free to just study anything. And so we were really careful to curate the content for the groups to get one voice, kind of focus on one thing. And so we tried to multiply groups throughout the city in homes with a leader and a co-leader. And, you know, you guys have seen that model so many times. It works. Worked for us.
How did you manage, like in the South, by and large, people are predisposed to some awareness of Scripture, biblical knowledge. How did you close that gap?
It's hard.
Or what measures did you take to close the gap?
Yeah, I mean, we tried to give them easy questions. We tried to give them plenty of tools. We tried to overcome the resistance of you're the Bible teacher instead of you're the conversation leader. Mm-hmm. And so we said you're facilitating a group. You're not teaching your group. Mm-hmm. So taking some of the burden of the expectation of I didn't go to seminary. I don't even know all the books of the Bible in a row. I can't name the 12 disciples. We try to remove that barrier to give people the confidence that if we just give them a little material and they spend an hour with it, they'll be good to go. And it worked for us.
And I think that's fairly universal, not just in the West, because even though we're in the Bible Belt, not everyone has attended seminary or
right.
knows, especially I think in Nashville, because it's such a melting pot of people coming from all different parts of the country. But anywhere, I love that approach of taking that barrier, making it as easy as possible, and saying just be one step ahead and facilitate a conversation around the Bible. So that's great. In your seat and being a pastor in different parts of the country and now president of Lifeway, what do you see when it comes to the future of discipleship methods for the Big C Church?
Yeah. Well, it's got to be relational. You know, when I talk to younger people, what they're really longing for is the mentoring, the relational piece that comes along with the textbook. There was a day where you just went to class, and that still exists, and there's a place for that. But the practical side of ministry is what younger people are longing to be taught in, and that comes through relationship, it comes through mentoring, it comes through life on life. And so I think as we think about the future of discipleship is how do we create more of that life on life with solid content where people can grow together and really learn together. I see a huge hunger for that. Don't you?
I do. Yeah. And I know you put a lot of emphasis on evangelism. Do you see small groups as a piece of that? Can small groups play a part in the evangelistic piece?
I think it just goes back to strategy. I mean, we had closed groups at Storyline. And the reason was because we had a church that was hungry for intimacy. And we had to figure out a way that wasn't just a new guy every week in the room where trust wasn't established with him so people wouldn't open up. But we would have a strategy to try to encourage our groups to do block parties and to do some specific things that would be more outreach driven. Mm-hmm. So I do think that without a strong focus on evangelism, discipleship can become ingrown really fast.
Yeah.
And I think it's a temptation that we all face, that we become really good at devotions, but we don't ever interact with someone who doesn't understand religion or Christianity. And it's a constant temptation for the discipleship culture. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
All right. So on just a follow-up question on the closed groups, how'd you guys do that? Did you have a campaign strategy in the fall? You had a big campaign, and that kind of launched and kicked off groups knowing that they may stay together or they may not, but there was a net gain after a campaign?
We did several major on-ramps per year in the fall, right after school started, and then right after the first year was our second big on-ramp. And I would, weeks leading up to from the pulpit, talk about how important it was to be in a group. You're not getting a full church experience. You're not in a group. We want you in a group. And we just try to keep starting new groups. We would also, as we got larger, realize there was a need for an immediate group. So we actually started a new here group on Sunday morning that met on campus that was told from the beginning, this is just an incubator group. We want you to have a place to land. But we want to start a new group out of this group or several groups, so that you didn't have a kind of a wait list experience that someday I'll get to be in a group. So that worked really well. A lot of connections were made there. Some of those people did form a group. Some went into existing groups once the on-ramp was reopened. And so we would kind of have completely new open enrollment every time the on-ramp started. That there were some challenges with that. Some people were, you know, wanting to protect the intimacy mm-hmm. of their group. So some of it had to do with some coaching about multiplication strategy and why it was so important. But that was a hard thing when a group started to establish that chemistry and didn't want to break up the group with new faces that would change the way it existed. And so we could probably chase that down, but there's pros and cons to both those approaches.
Chris, in the open enrollment method, I mean, is that something that you see a lot, the way that Ben's describing it?
Yeah, I do see that. I think it's hard to pull off, just like you're saying. Getting new people into existing groups is difficult because there's already existing relationships.
That's right.
And, you know, I equate it to like going into a new high school in the middle, and
yep.
there's just language that's already there and history and all of that. So that's hard. But I'm a big fan of, if a group's been together for a while, bring in new people. And the easiest way to do that is by inviting somebody that you know, that is your neighbor or somebody you've met at church, and then they already have that relationship established. And so they're not walking into the group as just, I don't know anybody. But sometimes it works too. I mean, we just opened our group up. We've had a group, this existing group, for a couple of years now, and we decided this past semester, just launched a month ago, to just open it up. And we've gotten 4 or 5 new people that have stuck, and they're integrating into the group, and it's going great. So.
Yeah.
It can work.
Yeah, there's different ways to do it for sure.
Yeah, you probably did work really close with group leadership. What did you, I mean, through that process and through your time at Storyline, what did you learn, Ben, about leader development and recruiting leadership in this format?
Yeah, you got to have really strong relationships with the small group leaders. As you guys know, division in the church happens at the small group level. So pastoring our group leaders, constantly being in communication with them, as we would begin to get news that there was a conversation developing in a group that wasn't healthy, yeah, stay on top of that. Because when you set a group free to have conversation around the Bible, it's going to get messy. And if you don't care for the community doctrinally, philosophically, so that the relationship between our group's pastor and all the group leaders was super important. Where we were beginning to be stretched, left there to come to Lifeway, we were going to have to develop a new paradigm of developing another layer of managers, because the groups, too many direct reports to our group's pastor. So we were about to have to blow the whole thing up and kind of restructure so that there was more proximity to a coach and a leader. And so that was evolving.
So where leadership is concerned, who have been some of your influences, what you may call go-to leaders, where be it books or people, blogs, who are some of those people that have really helped you throughout your ministry?
Yeah, let me answer that question in an unorthodox way, because I think you might expect me to say people like Tim Keller and, you know, the great preachers, teachers, thinkers, the C.S. Lewis's, and I love reading all that. I have actually been most helped by two books, Todd Henry's Accidental Creative and David Allen's book, Getting Things Done. If there were two books that have most helped me as a church planner and as a leader, it's those two books. Because I've baptized them. They're not Christian books, but I figured out ways to baptize them and incorporate them. I mean, those are the kind of things they don't teach you in seminary, is how do you really get things done? How do you do self-leadership in such a way that there's traction and momentum that's being gained in your own life and the lives of the others. I am by nature, my wife would tell you, a very scattered person. I mean, I can just whack them all. And if I don't get...
Seven on the Enneagram, right? Because that's where
I'm enthusiastic.
I feel you.
That's right. I'm a seven. I can be really unfocused. And so, and when it comes to learning, I want to learn everything. I've had to put blinders on a horse. Like, I've had to put those blinders on and focus on the things that are most important. The book Essentialism was super helpful for me.
Essentialism.
Greg McKeown.
Yep. Just narrowing down your life to those few things that matter the most, and what is the strategy you're developing to grow those areas? And then the creativity side of church life just doesn't get talked about enough. I think creativity, what Todd Henry does with creativity in terms of one of our IT leaders said this yesterday. I thought it was brilliant. He said, process eliminates the need for heroics. And what Todd Henry has taught me is how important it is to put a creative process into your life. That's the way I would preach and teach. And what that means is getting upstream from the creative moment as far as possible and begin to develop the creative moment. It just takes time. You have to let it marinate. And I was not doing that early in my ministry, and that has completely changed the way I approach things now.
When it comes to reading books, do you tend to balance it out, like read a leadership business type book and then more of a, Christian book? Do you go back and forth, or how does that work for you?
Yeah, in my healthy reading moments, which I'm not in a healthy reading moment, since I came to Lifeway, I've been reading people. I mean, I have had countless conversations with just Lifeway. I mean, this is a big team here, 800 people in this building that I want to get to know and love and care for and listen to. So I'm on a little bit of a pause on my reading aggressiveness. But if I wasn't the new CEO at Lifeway, I normally have 4 or 5 books going. Mm-hmm. And I like to take in a chapter or two of different kinds of books to read along, stimulate different kinds of parts of my brain. So I love to have something just devotional going that's helping me think about my relationship with the Lord. I love to have something kind of Marcus Buckingham-ish, strengths and pulling out the best of your life. I love to have something going around parenting. Because I've just found if I'm not reading around parenting, I get into default mode really easy. Mm-hmm. Reading books about being a good dad is really helpful for me. Mm-hmm. So I normally try to think about all the different hats I wear, and am I reading something that's stimulating that part of my life?
Yeah, that's good. Another question for you, and we've started asking some of our guests this question, and it's...
Only the best.
Only the best, yes. But when you think back, and this is hard, and it may not just be one, but what single decision from your time in leadership, if given the chance, would you change?
Yeah, that's a really good question. This is going to be a non-answer, but it's an answer, okay? Just hold with me. I feel like there have been moments in my life where I allowed fear to overwhelm me. But when I read the New Testament and what Jesus really called those apostles to do, it meant walking away from everything that was sure. And not just once, on a continual basis. I mean, when you think about it, just read with fresh eyes what Jesus asked the fishermen to do and walk away from those nets. I mean, just put yourself in their shoes. And then not only that, once they get inside, the hits just keep on coming in terms of comfort level. He keeps putting them into positions that they do not want, they do not desire, they never saw coming. And so I think there have been so many moments in my life when I was afraid and I let fear prevent me from following God. And I'm learning more and more to embrace fear, to realize that hard is actually normal for the Christian life. And so many folks I know seem to live their life in a desire for security, but that's not where the happiness is. Security doesn't bring happiness. It's following Jesus and feeling secure in Him, and even when circumstances feel out of control. And so I know that sounded a little bit like a sermon, but that's what God has continually teaching me over the last 10 years. I mean, as I stepped away from a comfortable church environment here that I loved, I mean, I loved my church in West Tennessee. It was painful to leave them, to go to a church that didn't exist, and then to leave that church that I founded, that I started, to come to Lifeway, that I've never been in this world before. God has grown my faith so much through embracing fear. And so I guess what I would say to your ministry leaders who are listening is don't be afraid to take risks. Don't be afraid to do hard things, because that's when God really gets the most glory out of your life.
That's good.
I want to add to that. I'm so tempted, but that is such a good place to end, because I've had similar conversations with my daughters who are both doing hard things.
Yep.
But that's wonderful. There's a difference between hard and laborious.
That's right.
Yep.
It's great talking to you guys. And man, groups is where the action is in a local church. And I have such a great appreciation for everybody who's listening in. And what you do matters. It's rarely applauded. But I think the real spine of the church, the real community of the church, is in its group life.
I agree.
So thanks for what they do.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for this episode of Group Answers. And we would love if you would subscribe. And if you do, rate us, especially on iTunes. That helps other people see the podcast. And like, we just got one the other day that loved the Enneagram series that we did. So if you enjoy the podcast, we'd love for you to do that and download it and share it with somebody else.
And if we hear good, positive feedback like that, that doesn't mean that we'll just do 5 more Enneagram shows, even though we might.
There's always room for more.
But we do read those, and we do take those into consideration with guests and future topics. So thanks for doing that. That's going to wrap it up for Chris and I. Thank you, Ben, for I know you're busy, for taking a few minutes and being with us today.
Thanks for having me in.
Look forward to being with everyone again next time on the Group Answers Podcast Show.